Adams, a member of the Irish Parliament, has been a leader of the Sinn Féin for decades and has always denied that he was a member of the IRA.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Tuesday, May 19th, 2015. Israeli troops demolish stores in Jerusalem and kidnap civilians during invasions targeting West Bank communities. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli soldiers invaded on Tuesday at dawn Ain Allo's neighborhood in Silwan town of occupied East Jerusalem and demolished three Palestinian stores belonging to a Palestinian from the town. The Wadi Hilwa Information Center in Silwan has reported that soldiers closed all roads leading to the neighborhood, preventing Palestinians from entering or leaving it, and demolished three stores belonging to Anas Karama. Soldiers also assaulted Karama as he was trying to reach his stores, causing various cuts and bruises, and proceeded to demolish his property. Karama said that he finished construction of his three stores nearly 2 months ago and that he was still preparing to finish them. He added that he had some tools, gravel and bricks in his stores and that the soldiers did not allow him to remove them. On Tuesday at dawn, Israeli soldiers kidnapped 11 Palestinians, including two children, after breaking into their homes and searching them in different parts of the occupied West Bank. Media sources in northern West Bank district of Jenin said that dozens of soldiers invaded the town of Ya'bud and Jaba' south of Jenin city and kidnapped five Palestinians. Soldiers also invaded and searched several homes in the southern West Bank city of Hebron and kidnapped two Palestinians. Furthermore, soldiers kidnapped two Palestinian children after storming their families' homes in Al-Arrub refugee camp north of Hebron. Several army vehicles also invaded Beit Fajar town south of the West Bank city of Bethlehem and kidnapped two men after searching their homes. In related news, the Palestinian Detainees Committee has reported on Tuesday that several detainee Palestinian children held by Israel testified to their lawyer about repeated torture, abuse, and intimidation by Israeli interrogators and soldiers. The committee said that the detainee children continue to suffer ongoing violations, torture, and abuse by Israeli interrogators in direct violation of international law. The Detainees Committee said that Israel is currently holding captive 200 Palestinian children in Ofar, Megiddo, and Hasharon military prisons. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, May 19th, 2015 news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Alan Monticello, Cliff Varla, Doug McVeigh, and Jared Dantzler. The producer tonight is Jim Thompson, our engineer Sequoina Wright. The KABU Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available online at our website, kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KABU News. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 0.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Jared Dantzler.
And I'm Nicole Weinstock. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Wednesday, Talk Radio host Paul Roland is joined by guests from Rethinking Psychiatry and the electroshock survivor movement, Marsha Myers of Rethinking Psychiatry, and electroshock survivor Deborah Schwarzkopf. At 9 on Political Perspectives, host Kathleen Stevenson speaks with Per Espen Stoknes about his new book, What We Think About When We Try Not to Think About Global Warming, Toward a New Psychology of Climate Action. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, The Food Show features an interview with chef Nora Pouillon, whose restaurant Nora was the first restaurant in the United States to be certified organic. Also an interview with Ajamu Umi, organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, who started a free breakfast program in North Portland this past April. We'll also hear from Jim Myers about seed breeding research at Oregon State University, and we'll learn a bit about Portland's curbside composting program. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent membership drive. If you missed it, it's not too late. You can still be part of it by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Offshore drilling in the Arctic Ocean doesn't just affect global temperature levels. Native American communities in northern and coastal Alaska have had to deal with the consequences of oil for decades. Drilling has devastated regional ecosystems and threatens to destroy a local economy that has existed for thousands of years. Alan Monticello spoke with George Edwardson, who is the vice president of the Inupiat community of the Arctic Slope.
Tell me about the particular areas of the Chukchi Sea in which Shell is planning to drill for oil.
Okay, it's between Point Hope and Point Lay out in the open ocean, and that is in the middle of the migratory path of the migrating whales into the northern Arctic Canada. And all the migratory birds that migrate, this is their route. And more important of all, this is where the Pacific Ocean's currents that flow north for 4 months out of the year bring salmon fingerlings that are leaving the rivers to go out. And I've had marine mammal observers in some of the boats take pictures and GPS locations of wherever salmon fingerling were found out in the Arctic Ocean, and everywhere they went, that's what they ran into. Salmon fingerlings, sometimes up to 200 miles off. And one of the pet projects NOAA's director had for a few years was to assess the salmon fingerlings from the southwestern to the Canadian border going north. And all he found, the whole route, was salmon fingerlings. And when the industry was doing its seismic in the Lee Sale 193, that's when they were doing their explosives, that's when they chased mature salmon that should have migrated down to the rivers where they came from, chased them into the Arctic rivers. And when they did that, Yukon River people didn't catch their, annual catch for fish. And then some people blamed the foreign fleets. And what really happened was the migration was disrupted by the seismic. Give you an example, 100 miles offshore in Wainwright, 100 miles to the west of Barrow, they were doing seismic out there. over in the Canadian border in Banks Island, they had to shut their instruments off because of the background noise from the seismic and the Chukchi was so loud. And you're looking at over pretty close to 500 miles away.
And what about the communities that live near the drilling areas? Could you tell me more about those?
We have 8 communities that live up north. There's Cots, Point Hope, clear to the northwestern end. Then a little over 100 miles toward the east is Point Lay. And another 100 miles, over 150 miles to the east and more northeast is Wainwright, Alaska. And then Barrow is up on the top. And then you keep going east, you go to the Colville River, 189 miles further east, there's Nuiqsut. And you go close to the Canadian border, there is Koktovik to the far east. And in the interior, there's Atkasuk, that's a little over 60 miles from Barrow off the coast. And then our mountain community at Oktovik Pass, that's might be about a couple hundred miles to the south of where Barrow is. And we have, as a regional tribal government, we have a 91,000-mile jurisdiction.
Abigail Hopper from the Department of the Interior said, quote, "We have taken a thoughtful approach to carefully considering potential exploration in the Chukchi Sea, recognizing the significant environmental, social, and ecological resources in the region, and establishing high standards for the protection of this critical ecosystem, our Arctic communities, and the subsistence needs and traditions of Alaska Natives," end quote. Do you buy that statement, and why or why not?
I can't buy that because I'm a geologist, mining and petroleum technician, and a certified gas field operator. I've worked in the industry for over 15, 16 years. No, that is not true. Those are just sweet words that they're saying to us with no meaning behind them. I mean, my college education was to take the industry offshore. And then I stood up to it because there was no safe way of doing it. Best example I can give you is Prudhoe Bay, which has been producing over 30 years. And in that field right there, my father grew up in that part of the world. His father had that trading post at Beachy Point, and that's where he lived. And the airport that the industry uses, they call Dead Horse, is where my father found a prospector's mule that ran away. And the industry's scientists found the skull of that mule and claimed they found the skull of a prehistoric horse and then gave the place the name Dead Horse. My father grew up over there. He used to fish. His father used to fish, and him, my dad and his brother used to check their nets, and the fish they caught don't exist there anymore. Sole, halibut, flounders, those are all gone. And what white fish there is left there, the two types, the lesser white fish in the Arctic, Cisco, the big one, those, when you go in that area, if you happen to catch them, they're skinny and they're full of sores. And those sores and skinniness, the skinniness comes from the vibration of the drillings in the oil field. The ground is frozen, so it'll vibrate noise easy because, you know, it's got ice. It's traveling through ice, the permafrost. And all these years, they've been dumping their drilling muds and their cuttings into the ocean. It's been going on, and there's no guidelines, no basic studies done, so we can't stand up and take them in court and prove that they damaged it because there's no baseline. Now, they're attempting to say they have a baseline in the Arctic where when they come up in 1 year, let's say they might be out there 2 weeks out of the year because there's only one boat going out there. And what little they see, they claim that's the baseline, which you can't accept. Now, if you depend on salmon and the whole Arctic, Chukchi is a nursery because the Pacific Ocean flies, you know, drains into it for 4 months out of the year. People that rely on the fish have no choice. They have to stand up or you're going to lose your fish. And the last third of the world's fish is right there.
Have you met with anybody from the federal government or the Obama administration?
Oh, yes. I've talked to him direct myself twice. Been in the same room with him or with the other tribes. You know, when the tribes meet with Obama, the president, on his campaign promise, I've been to four of those. And the last time I was talking to him, me and him, we talked for over 10 minutes and talked about the Arctic. And then the heads of all his federal agencies. We do government to government, being a regional tribal government federally recognized. So we need to talk to an agency. We contact the director or whoever is in charge of what we want to talk about. And we contact them and do our government to government, you know, meetings. They come to our meetings or connect with us telephonically.
What is the best way forward here? Should the Obama administration ban drilling outright in the Arctic?
For now, we need to have it stopped because the ecosystem is going through a cultural shock from three different influences. One, you can't do anything about the global warming. It's happening. It's going to happen. And the ecosystem is changing itself right now. The animals are changing. The fish are changing. You know, it's going through a total change. And in order for the ecosystem to survive properly, you got to leave it alone. And you can't go out there banging away and drilling and start running all over them. Oil and gas, you say, we can't drive without it. About 6-7 years ago, there was a discovery of a very large field on the whole